Let's go to the Rumble Revolution hotline. Kevin Sherrington has been kind enough to come on with us today. He's with the Dallas Morning News. And, Kevin, good morning.
Morning. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. We were just talking to Stephen Jones, and obviously they've got some work to do to play at their own Super Bowl, I guess, as it were. But certainly the Rangers' fever around here has gone through the roof, and it's been pretty awesome. And I guess to get to this point, you know, with them knocking off the Yankees on their way to the World Series, it's a pretty significant deal. Just talk about, you know, and of course they've been, you know, I guess division leaders as far back as I can remember this year. I can't remember when they actually took the lead, but they've owned that division for so long this year. I guess a lot of people expected them to make a little bit of a run, but maybe not to get to the World Series. So just from your perspective, talk about what you've seen out of this team, and I guess sort of the, from a peripheral standpoint, the kind of fan excitement you've seen in the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
Well, there's a lot of caution in all the fans here for a long time. They're used to being disappointed, and so they don't like it. And any time the team would do well, I had people who write me all the time and regular customers, and so you have a running dialogue with them. And the first time something would go wrong, they would say, "See, it's just the same old Rangers." I had a guy that wrote me that during the Tampa Bay series. I thought, you know, here they are. In the playoffs, and they were up 2-0, and they lose one game, and the guy says it's the same old Rangers. It's not the same old Rangers I've ever seen.
Yeah. So just you know, talk about from your perspective what you've seen out of this team and what's sort of set them apart from other teams, I guess, that you've covered with the Rangers, and why you think they've gotten to where they are today. Some of the keys,
well,
I think.
I go back. I was born in Dallas and grew up in Houston, and so I worked at newspapers around Houston and in Houston and here. So I've seen a lot of bad baseball in my time. I came to the Morning News in '85, and that was really a kind of a new era for baseball for the Rangers. They were starting to build from within a little bit, and the farm system was being built up. And there was a lot of promise back then, a lot of big arms in the system. And you may remember Tom House, who was the pitching coach back then. He was famous for having his pitchers throw footballs. And in the end, they might have been more successful if they'd been pitching footballs than baseball. It didn't turn out very well for most of those guys. This was an organization that had never produced pitching. The two best pitchers ever produced by this organization, who actually grew up in it, were Kevin Brown and Kenny Rogers. Kevin Brown ended up being a pretty successful pitcher, and Kenny Rogers was too. But that's not much to claim in 38 years is two guys. Everybody else that hadn't had any success at all, they got from someplace else. So what changed in the philosophy of this organization was several years ago, when I think it really started when Tom Hicks started to run out of money, and he decided, you know, he couldn't win by buying players. He tried that very briefly and didn't work out very well with Alex Rodriguez and a few other free agents. So he went with the farm system approach, which is all the rage in baseball now, and certainly a lot cheaper way to build an organization. And they started to build some with some drafts. John Daniels, the young general manager, did a good job, made some bad trades early on, and really alienated himself from a lot of the fan base. And there are still a lot of fans out here who would tell you that John Daniels is a bad GM, and that's just foolishness. He made some bad deals early on. There's no question about that. But then he made some unbelievable deals. And the linchpin to the whole thing was when he traded Mark Teixeira to the Braves and got Nathalie Feliz and Elvis Andrews in that deal, as well as Jared Saltalamacchia, a catcher they sent to the Red Sox, and Matt Harrison, a left-handed pitcher who still has some promise. So that was you ended up getting a guy who may end up being a rookie of the year as a closer, and a guy who is an all-star shortstop for a player who was not going to come back. That really set the Rangers in motion as far as what they can do now. The team is built off speed and defense and pitching, which is, you know, really the basis of all good baseball. And that was sight was lost to that in the 90s because of the steroids era and everybody trying to build with power. And there was no need to have a fast team because all you were doing was waiting for a three-run, you know, home run. I never liked that kind of baseball myself. I always liked the approach they take now. It's just, to me, it's much more fun and intimidating. And you could sense that in this series when they were always aggressive. Elvis Andrus has been, to me, the key to the series. I know that Josh Hamilton was the MVP of the LCS, and certainly he's a great talent. But to me, it's kind of hard to give it to a guy who gets intentionally walked every other at bat. Elvis was on early, and I believe he hit in every single game in the series in both series, and he was always on early, always stealing a base, moving around, getting the Rangers the lead early, and that has been the key for this team. They get a lead early, that kind of gives them a little bit of confidence. It loosens them up. They're a very loose crew as it is, almost goofy, you might say, and the pitching has been just terrific, and that has been something that no one ever expected of the Rangers, that the pitching would be good. People always said it's too hot to pitch here, it's too windy, the wind blows out, a thousand things that can go wrong. They found what could work, pitch to contact, get ground balls. They grew the grass in the infield higher to slow the balls down. So it's not necessarily a great fielding infield. Anderson certainly is, and Kinsler has that ability. Michael Young's not a good third baseman, and they've had troubles at first base, depending on who they have over there. But it's good enough. And then in the outfield, they have good arms out there, and they run pretty well. So it's a much better defensive team than it's been in the past, too. And that's all of why John Daniels hired Ron Washington. He wanted a guy who had that kind of approach and who wanted defense and to preach those types of things. And it's just all come together.
Kevin Sherrington of the Dallas Morning News joining us in the zone today as we broadcast today live from Dallas at the Weston Park Central. Let me ask you about Cliff Lee specifically, because, of course, we're biased because he's an Arkansas guy. But to me, I think he was as much a factor, not only winning on the mound, but I think just from an intimidation factor and the fact that they knew that he was looming on the mound in Game 7, I really think it had an impact on the series in ways that, maybe not with him actually pitching, but as far as, you know, them knowing that having to face him, it was going to be tough to get over that hump the way he's pitching right now.
Well, there's a lot of ripple waves that come off of Cliff Lee. One of them is the fact of how good he is, obviously. And secondly is the impact he has on his own team. He has an impact on the other pitchers. They watch how he pitches. They see what he does. They can't necessarily duplicate that because he's so incredibly accurate. But they learn a lot from him. And certainly the team, the lineup takes a big boost from that. They know that they're not going to have to go out there and score 7 runs to win a game. They know if they get 3 or 4, that's going to do it. So that has an impact. I'm sure there was an impact on them, on the Yankees as well, knowing that even if we win this game tomorrow, we've got Cliff Lee, and he's killed us 2 years in a row. So I think that certainly was an impact. I do also think, though, going into the playoffs, to me the only thing that was going to stop the Rangers is if they stopped themselves. They've shown that tendency this year. They do some goofy things out there. They run into a lot of outs. For a team that runs as well as they do, they're very fast and aggressive. They also run foolishly sometimes, and that showed up a little bit in the series a couple of times as well. A couple of guys getting picked off in critical points of games and also running into some outs otherwise. I felt like that Tampa Bay was going to be difficult because of their starting pitching, and that was a difficult matchup. And the Rangers eventually won that because of Cliff Lee. I didn't feel like the Yankees were going to be as tough. The Yankees really struggled with their pitching in the second half of the year. Besides Sabathia, there was a big questions almost everywhere. Andy Pettit pitched very well, considering the fact he'd been off so long. But Phil Hughes had been terrible pretty much since June. At that point, he was 10-1, and then I think he won 3 games the rest of the year. And they didn't have the same kind of pitching they usually do. And some of their guys, if you look at that lineup, as powerful as it is, and certainly as well paid as it is, a lot of those guys really kind of had off years. And the Rangers have a pretty solid lineup. I would match the Rangers lineup with just about anybody. The question that came up for the Rangers in the playoffs has been their bullpen. They are a little short back there because of the loss of people like Frankie Francisco, and they were really overused most of the year. So they're kind of on fumes right now, and that's one of the reasons why they're not taking Derek Holland out of the bullpen and putting him in the rotation in place of Tommy Hunter, who's not been very effective and who will be the Game 4 starter. And that's because Derek's been so good out of the bullpen, they kind of hate to take his arm out of there.
Right. How realistic do you think it is going forward to lock down Cliff Lee and maybe hold on to him going forward?
We've talked about that ever since he came here. The feeling was that he thought he was going to the Yankees in the first place. And he's good friends with CC Sabathia. And And I thought all along the chances were pretty slim. I still don't think they're real good, but they're certainly a lot better. The farther they go and the more they win, the more he likes it. You know, he didn't like it last year when the Phillies traded him. He was on a World Series team and had built some relationships there and really loved it. And that really hurt him that the Phillies would trade him, and rightfully so. You know, I know Doc Holliday's a great pitcher, but it's not like he's the Cliff's any chump either. So that really did have an impact on him. He may feel more inclined to stay. I know a lot of people talk about the fact because Cliff's from Benton, he's closer here and all that, and that's true. But if you're making $25 million a year, you don't mind paying for a private flight to get you home in an hour. I don't think that's going to be a really big issue. I think the issue will be, does he think that the Rangers can continue to win? I think that they can if he stays. I think if he leaves, then you lose an ace, and then everything is off the books then. I'm not sure that the Rangers can continue to win at this level without an ace like that. But, you know, C.J. Wilson was very good this year, but I think it was a lot to expect of him to make this kind of jump and maybe to make it again next year. I just don't know if you can count on him to do that back-to-back. They don't really have anybody ready to step up and assume that kind of role otherwise either. So if he stays, you know, it's a young team. They've got some older players. They've got some questions. They got a question at catcher. You know, what are they going to do with Benji Molina? Are they going to bring him back? Are they going to bring back Vlad Guerrero? These guys aren't costing a lot of money, but they're costing some. And if you make those signings with those guys, then, or if you make the signing with Cliff Lee, what can you do? How much do you want to jump the payroll? You know, the payroll is probably around 60, 65 right now. If they sign Cliff Lee, it's going to cost them at least $25 million a year. It's probably, so that's going to be a big jump over what they have now. They have the new ownership in place. Maybe they're willing to make that commitment. Maybe they're not. I'm not quite sure. Although I do think if they were to let Cliff get away simply because they didn't want to pay what the going rate was, there will be a tremendous backlash in this community.
Talk about Nolan Ryan's impact on the team. And, you know, it seems like, again, and we were talking to Stephen Jones about this a little bit ago, it seems like a magical year with him coming back into the fold and being involved in his role now. And I don't know, just talk about, you know, I guess what kind of difference it's made, you know, with him at the helm and him in his current role, or maybe we're kind of overstating it. Do you think he's had a major impact in what's gone on here?
Well, it's funny you should say that. I do feel like let me just start it this way. When Nolan Ryan signed as a free agent pitcher in 1989, he came here and was a, you know, threw two no-hitters, and he got his 5,000th strikeout here and his 300th win here, and it was all a lot of fun. And it all disguised the fact that the Rangers still weren't very good. And then if you look at his record here, and people have said to me, he's certainly one of the greatest pitchers the Rangers ever had. And, well, he's not. I mean, he was a lot of fun to watch, and he had the two no-hitters, but he didn't win a lot of games here. He was a much older pitcher when he got here, and he was very effective for about a year and a half, 2 years. But that was really about it. But what Tom Grieve will tell you is that when he signed Nolan Ryan, Nolan Ryan gave the Rangers credibility. And I don't doubt that. I don't doubt that people felt like that because of what Nolan had accomplished, that he was really, he meant something to the franchise, certainly from the standpoint of what it signified to the rest of the country. And that says a little bit about who the Rangers were, which is not very good, and it says a lot about who Nolan was. I think the same thing has happened now. I think that in many ways, Nolan gives them credibility, certainly with the fan base here. And as I said a while ago, people here, for the most part, don't like John Daniels. And it's because they remember the John Danks trade and, you know, trading him for Brandon McCarthy and getting, you know, nothing from Brandon McCarthy. For the Chris Young trade and trading Adrian Gonzalez and Chris Young to the Padres and getting very little in return for that. For letting Armando Galarraga go for nothing to the Tigers, and then he throws what should have been a perfect game. I think that there are people who are not willing to forgive him that and those blunders and still not give him credit for everything he's done since then. We've discussed this a lot here in this market and about who gets the most credit here for the Rangers' success. And I think everybody has a little piece of it. But I think John Daniels gets most of the credit. He's the one who built the farm system. He's the one who made the Teixeira trade. he's the one who made the trade at the trade deadline to get Cliff Lee, actually a month before the trade deadline, which was an unbelievable deal. And as Cliff Lee's agent said in a story we had just the other day in the paper, that trade only got done because of the persistence of John Daniels. The Mariners had told the Rangers that they had a deal with the Yankees. And John said, until I actually see the transaction, I am not giving up on this trade. And at that point, Nolan had given up on it. I think what Nolan brings is credibility with fans who don't like John Daniels, who don't like these young guys in charge that they've never heard of. They love Nolan. They love what he's done. And certainly Nolan is a sounding board. And I'm not saying that John Daniels is perfect here, and he's certainly not. He's got a long ways to go to understand how to deal with people, how to deal with the media. And Nolan is very good at all those things just because he's a very genuine guy. He's nothing what he doesn't seem to be. Right. And he has certainly helped from that standpoint. And he has been a sounding board from the standpoint of making deals. I know that on some of the deals that were made, the Cliff Lee deal in particular, one of the pitchers they gave up from that deal was a former first-round draft pick. And Nolan, he gave his side of that and what he had seen from that pitcher the few times he had seen him pitch. And those kind of things do help, certainly they do. And as I said, everybody's a part of this. Even Tom Hicks, as reviled as he is in this market now, he is at least the guy who hired John Daniels and hired Ron Washington and hired Nolan Ryan. So you got to give him credit for that.
There you go. Well, Kevin, listen, we appreciate the insight very much. Thanks for making time with us today.
No problem.